Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to The Naturalist Capitalist. I am your host, Reed Coverdale, and back on the show for the second time, we have Angela McCardle. You guys all know her. She's running for chair of the Libertarian Party for 2022. How are you doing tonight, Angela?
I am doing great. I'm a little, because I've been prepping for the LA County Convention that's happening on July 10th.
Oh, boy. Well, thank you for coming back on again. I really appreciate it. I am now a member of the Mises Caucus. I joined, I don't know, a couple weeks ago because of what was going on in New Hampshire. And I know a lot of other people who joined over that whole ordeal. I was wondering, what are your reflections on how that turned out? I think most people already know what happened, but are you happy with the way everything transpired?
I mean, mostly yes. So I don't like that we put New Hampshire through what we put them through. I think it was insulting to them. I think that they were devalued, and their rights, you know, and their opinions at least were not taken into consideration. And I think that's really crappy. But when I look back on it from a utilitarian perspective and I see, okay, people who were actively working against the party's interest, who have openly said they despise half the party, everyone in the Mises Caucus, a lot of those people rage quit over it. And I'm not sad that that happened. That's like exactly what we've been talking about, how like we don't have to chase anyone out. They're just going to leave on their own when we become more principled. So, you know, I'm glad that that happened. I hope that going forward, though, if heaven forbid we have to deal with anything like this again, that the National Party will actually reach out and, you know, say, hey, what do you guys, you know, what do you want us to do? Because this is really your arena and we've just been kind of pulled into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as you know, I have been the unity guy since the beginning of the year. And I think what a lot of people don't understand is you can't have unity if one side is continuing the hysteria, if they're always stabbing you in the back, if they're always maligning you, if they're always making up fake accusations about you. And I think it's kind of funny that in the beginning, the people that were excited and reaching out to me were people from the Mises Caucus. You know, they were like, yeah, let's do this. Let's have this unity. Yeah. And then it wasn't until the Pragmatist Caucus started dying that they said, oh, yeah, no, we like this unity stuff, too. But I don't know, the veil had kind of already been pulled away, and it's been kind of obvious that almost all of the animosity is going in one direction. And I'll admit that I didn't know it was that blatant at the beginning. I saw some of it, but throughout the last several months, I've been shocked at how many people really hate other libertarians who, you know, they've really created this caricature of who they are in their minds that's not accurate. And I'm assuming you already knew most of this, and it's probably why I got a little bit of pushback in the beginning. But has it been surprising to you at all by how many people have come down on the wrong side or have just continued to be stupid and continued to try to push people away?
I don't think so. I mean, I've kind of watched the whole thing unfold, right? And people are intellectually dishonest, and sometimes they're just lazy. And when you see someone who's behaving like a bad actor, and they do it repeatedly, 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 and you say, hey guys, can't we all just get along? Like, you're being lazy, you're being intellectually dishonest. I guess it takes courage to look at someone and call them out and say, hey, your behavior is disrespectful, and you're mischaracterizing someone, or you're just straight up lying about them. And a lot of people don't have the guts to do that. And you know, I think it's funny because everybody's willing to be like a keyboard warrior and scream, you know, insults on the internet. But when it comes right down to it, people are not courageous enough to just say in plain language, in a non-confrontational way, like, please cut it out. And I think that that was very, like, that has been revealed over the past few months, which is unfortunate, you know. I don't know. I'm just glad that the worst elements of the party seem to be dispersing. That makes me happy, because that means the rest of us can focus on what we're supposed to be doing, right? Which is fighting the state, not each other. It's absurd that we spend so much time arguing with people that who we agree with on 90 to 95% of the issues. It's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think that drama is stupid, but what's been happening hasn't been drama. I mean, it's been serious stuff, and it's things that had to be rectified in order for us to move forward. And I tend to stay out of most of the bullshit drama, but this was something that was so obviously wrong, and the lines that have been drawn have been pretty obviously partisan in on one side, I think. You know, one side has just been really really exclusion really excluding of one of the other side. You know, they've just been saying like, you guys are alt-right, you're racist, you're Republican light, which, you know, I had my own criticisms of the Mises Caucus when I first joined the party, but they weren't any of those things. Like, my criticism of the Mises Caucus was I thought they were too crazy. I thought they were too too idealistic, too narrow-minded. It was never that they were Republican light or racist or alt-right. Like, all these accusations are stupid. I mean, the guy that the Mises Caucus ran in 2020 was Jacob Hornberger, and to call him Republican light, one of the things he was doing the most was saying that conservatives and progressives are the same and they're both evil and they've both ruined our country. And you know, Justin Amash is he was calling Justin Amash a conservative, you know, like instead of a libertarian or whatever. Like, this idea that the Mises Caucus is regurgitated Republicans who are just trying to find another party, it's just so dumb and so ridiculous. And I think anyone of good faith who's looking at this with an open mind and without blinders can see that that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, those sort of accusations aren't founded in reality. If we were a bunch of white supremacists, we wouldn't have a bunch of Latino people in our party, you know, and black people and Asian people. It's so absurd that it's insulting to me when people believe it. Because I'm like, that's obviously not the case. You can look through our membership roster and do a quick social media scan and see that it's not all white people. And there's a lot of gay people in the caucus too. So the homophobic, transphobic slur crap is also just like insane. So anybody who pushes that is basically okay with lying and smearing people that they're supposed to be on the same team with. And those people just really don't belong in any sort of movement where we have to work together. So I'm happy to unify with anyone who doesn't attack me. I feel like that's a pretty low standard, you know? Like, you don't have to be in the Mises Caucus. You don't have to even agree with me on every single thing. Like, I get along really well with Alicia Mattson and Aaron Starr. They're Mises friendly. I call them heretical prags because they like didn't align with the prags on the online convention crap of 2020. We don't agree on every single thing, and sometimes I fight with them a little bit at state convention, but in the end, I think we're working towards the same goals. And based on that, you know, like, we can get along. And that's really how it should be across the board. None of this like insane name calling with Nazi, white supremacists. Like, it's like you're talking, who are you talking? You're talking about like mixed race soccer moms. You're calling them Nazis. We have a lot of women in the party too, but somehow we're a bunch of incels. Okay, what else? You know, I'm an alien from Mars. Okay, it's like they might as well just be like the most absurd accusations that you can make. It's not very libertarian.
No, not at all. And I agree with you. Like, I want to move beyond this phase of stupidity and start taking on the actual problem, which is the state, because they're, I mean, this distraction is just so dumb and it's getting so old. And we really want to get the ball rolling and actually start doing something. But the Pragmatist Caucus dissolved. I mean, the organization doesn't exist anymore, right? Or what does that actually mean? Like, because there's still people who consider themselves prags, but the actual caucus doesn't really exist anymore, right?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of speculation. So everything I'm going to say is speculation, right? One person said, oh, several people have said they're going to dissolve and then try to infiltrate all of the other caucuses. Okay, takeover language, right? Well, whatever. And then someone else, a few other people actually have speculated that there was some financial malfeasance that happened and that they dissolved to avoid getting in trouble. something with the National Party, that money might have been changing hands how it wasn't supposed to be. I haven't seen any evidence of it, but there's people on the National Executive Committee who were saying that. So that's kind of interesting. I know what it means practically for now. It means that the Mises Caucus is the largest caucus and we're the most organized. So I like that, you know, regardless of all of the other speculation, I'm happy that we're taking the reins. We're growing the party. We're not just growing. I mean, our growth is like explosive. Every single day I get at least 3 new joins. Every single day. And that's just for California. But like, we're building infrastructure too. We have a really good emphasis on issue coalitions. And one thing that the Prags have always really stressed is candidates. I get it. We need to elect people. But a lot of our state and county parties have very loose, almost non-existent infrastructure, and there's nothing for candidates to attach themselves to. So when you run, especially if you haven't been active in local government, and that's most of the party, right? Not just Mises Caucus, like most libertarians, we despise government, so we don't want to get involved. But then you get in this weird dichotomy where you're like, well, I'm going to run. Okay, so you don't have any personal experience, and now you've got nothing to attach yourselves to by way of the party. So working on issue coalitions and getting some legislative experience is what our candidates can use to say, hey, I'm legitimate. I'm with these guys. And that's really important. And it's something that Marshall Byrd has talked about too, that, you know, like, he got elected in Wyoming and then he was like, now what? Because he's like, holy crap, I don't know how to write a bill. I don't know how to work this in committee, you know, and Apollo Pizzelle had to scramble to, you know, put something together, which is a tall order, you know, for him or anyone else. So I'm just really happy that the Mises Caucus is taking charge on all this stuff. And I think that we're just going to gain more momentum and get stronger into the future.
Yeah. So now that the Mises Caucus is basically leading the Libertarian Party, you delved into it a little bit there, but what do you envision as the future of the party? Because there seems to be a split. Some people want it to be a messaging tool, and then other people want it to be something that we can win elections with. Personally, I think we can do both of those things. I don't know why those have to be mutually exclusive, but you know, it's exciting having some big names like Justin Amash in the party. That's pretty cool. And then, you know, I talked to Jack Hunter a couple weeks ago, and he said he was getting interested in looking at the Libertarian Party. And, you know, so people are looking at us. What do you want the party to become now that the Mises Caucus is in the lead?
I want it to become a messaging tool that supports certain state level and local campaigns. The messaging isn't just messaging for the sake of messaging. It's to grow the liberty movement at large. You know, it's to grow the party, and then it's to grow the purpose of the party. The party doesn't just exist for the party's sake. That's where I get kind of weird, you know, on some of this, like some of the pragmatist ballot access stuff, is I'm like, well, what's the point of this? I want us to have ballot access, but we need to be using it for something besides just running people in elections. Cause that's kind of torturous. Yay, let's all run in elections every year where we get 3-5%. Oh, good job, good job. Like that's actually not a good job. Let's not do that. Let's not lie to ourselves. So I want us to message, and I want us to win targeted elections. And some of that's going to have to change culturally too. You know, like I got recruited into the party to run in a congressional race, and I was super excited to do it, and I was happy to do it. And then when I saw the vote totals come in, and I saw how hard the Feldman Foundation had worked on my campaign, and I had knocked all these doors and been to all these things, and I got like not a lot of votes, you know, and I was just like, geez, was that the best way to spend my time? I don't think so, right? Like, it would have been way better for me to try to run for some local position. But so anyway, that's kind of what I'm thinking. The National Party needs to do a better job of supporting county parties.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. As far as presidential campaigns go, are those mostly messaging tools or mostly a way to draw attention to the party and the down ballot races that you're talking about? Or what do you What do you view as the utility of making a presidential run?
Well, the presidential run definitely needs to be a messaging campaign. So we need to wake people up to liberty. We need to grow the party. And we need to maintain ballot access. And unfortunately, our last presidential race did not do a very good job of maintaining ballot access for a lot of reasons. You know, I think Spike Cohen did probably the most work that he possibly could do. I have been, you know, critical, but not a hater of the Joe Jorgensen campaign. I get that, like, it's hard, right? First of all, it's just hard to do that. It's hard to get like a bus and tour the country. That's no small feat. And then to do it when everything is locked down and more than half the population is terrified to get out of their homes, you know, like that doesn't make it easier. But if you're going to have those hurdles, you better be ready to rise to the challenge. So I think that whoever we run, they need to take that role very seriously. And also be realistic, right, about like the chances of winning. That's one thing that it's like the elephant in the room. We all talk about it, but it's still kind of awkward. Is like, this year we're really going to win. So people say that. And then on the other hand, I'll make like a comment on social media, like, what does it take to get 5%? And people laugh at me and ridicule me. Like, so I'm like, okay, so half the party thinks we can't get 5%, and that's insane. And then the other half of the party thinks that I'm an asshole if I don't say we're definitely going to win this election cycle. What is going on? That's bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, so how can we compel people to join this party and not the Republican Party or, for some reason, the Democrat Party? It's a different argument with agorists, but for people who actually want to be politically involved, why should they choose the Libertarian Party when we're so far from being able to make a difference when they could just join the Republican Party?
Well, the Republicans raised the debt ceiling, you know, last year. It like, I don't remember how much of the currency was printed last year. Was it a quarter?
Yeah, it was. Well, I saw conflicting reports. I saw one that said 30 something, but I don't think that was right. I think it was
at least 25% of the currency that's ever been in circulation was printed last year. That was done under the GOP watch. I think Justin Amash abstained. Rand Paul was out sick, so he couldn't vote. Thomas Massey voted against it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tulsi Gabbard also abstained.
She was in Hawaii. Yeah, she couldn't make it. Yeah.
Okay. Four people didn't vote for it. I don't recall if Mike Lee voted for it. He probably did. It was disappointing. But again, like, stop like gaslighting yourself by thinking that Republicans are fiscally conservative. They're not. Their foreign policy is still pretty awful. Like Ron DeSantis, what he's done in Florida, I think is great. Would I want him in the White House? Ugh, no. Like,
exactly.
Stay in your lane, you know? Like, thank you for opposing, like, tyrannical lockdown measures and vaccine passports. Although, to be fair, he did lock the people of Florida down for a little while at the beginning. So let's not pretend like the man's perfect, right? But, like, stay there. Please don't take your, like, hardcore Zionist stuff to the White House. I think that's reasonable. Yeah, we just need people to, like, look at things with an open and, like, honest opinion and be open-minded about things.
Yeah, so I agree with you 100% on the White House, but what about Eric Brakey's approach that, you know, we need to take over state legislatures and doing that through the Republican Party, you know, at a local level where it's not as corrupt and not as hard to get somebody in? Why should they choose the Libertarian Party there instead of the Republican Party?
I mean, I wish them the best of luck, but those parties, you think it's hard to take over the LP? It's much harder to take over the GOP. There is a lot more money and stuff at stake poured into that party, you know, deep, long-lasting, corrupt relationships. And they're not all going to be on board with libertarian principles. They're just not, because you know what? They're not libertarians. A lot of them are very closed borders and they're pro-drug war. And I get it. Not everybody is open borders. I understand that. But when you are perpetuating drug war policies, you are increasing the border crisis and all of that mess that comes with it. And you're probably also promoting the war on terror, because when we've got people guarding poppy fields, right, in foreign countries with guns. Like, that stuff comes home. So I think the GOP really fails to address that. They're very invested in fighting against the culture war. To a certain extent, I will agree with them on that. I won't be so naive as to always say, it's not left, it's not right, it's just free. Because sometimes there are things that we're going to agree with the GOP on. But sometimes right. there are things we agree with the Democrats on. You know, like, we need to really, like, distinguish ourselves. And we need to highlight, like, the good things that we agree with other people on. But it's also okay to just be like, your policy in that area sucks. And that's, they really need to cater to us, I guess. Like, if you want me to join the GOP, and I'm not going to because that would be absurd, but someone like me, you need to work for our vote and not try to convince us to join now. Because, like, the LP, okay, we haven't had much electoral success, but we're not murdering people.
Right.
That's a problem to me. Like, I'm just not on board. Maybe I'll be on board with a few choice select candidates like Thomas Massey, but I can't buy into the GOP. Like, you got to clean up that mess. Good luck, though.
Yeah, I really agree with your points about not, you know, if you can't take over the Libertarian Party, how on earth do you think you're going to take over the Republican Party? That's a very valid point. And then the other thing is, even though we have our own corruption, like we were talking about earlier in the stream, but it's not murdering people overseas. It's not incarcerating millions of people. I mean, it's a whole
right.
different level.
They tried to take over the GOP. There have been many attempts to take over the GOP with the Ron Paul Revolution. And in LA County, there was a Liberty Caucus attempt to take over the GOP back in like 2011. It failed miserably. So, like, anytime someone asks me, why don't you run Republican? I'm like, no, because believe it or not, we actually have a reputation with them. They don't like us. Like, they remember right. when, you know, 10 years ago we tried to take them over and they tossed all the Liberty people out. You know, just constant conflict and drama. So the GOP has a lot of problems, basically. A lot of problems.
Yeah. Let's see. We got another super chat here. Angela will be the slayer of the BFC. So I'm assuming you've heard that term that I came up with. the bitch fuck cucks. That's what I was calling the loser brigade, basically. The people who just do nothing but tear other people down. You know, they're not adding anything themselves. They're just parasites. They're just, they're not even like good socially left-wing libertarians or something. They're people who are sometimes right-leaning libertarians, but are just in there to eviscerate somebody else just to try to feed off their energy. I think it's been really important to draw a distinction between them and like the more blue-pilled people, because there's this dichotomy of red pill, blue pill. So if you're red pill, you're good. If you're blue pill, you're bad. I don't think it's really that simple, because that's a sliding scale. First of all, where are you? Are you purple? Yeah. Are you dark red? Are you dark blue? But then also, some people are well-intended who just aren't as, you know, viscerally anti-state as you and I are, you know, but they're still well-intended. They're there to reduce harm, you know, end wars, things like that. And I don't think those people are our enemies. What do you think about that? Is there an obvious distinction there to be made?
Oh, absolutely. There are people who are pretty blue-pilled and are still good libertarians. I think that they're not totally like awake to the truth, you know, but they're not malevolent. They're not malicious. They don't want to harm other people. They just subscribe to sort of, they tend to think that government is incompetent more so than it is evil.
Right.
And I disagree with them on that, but I respect that they put into work for things like ballot access, that they door knock for candidates. Like, they do what they're supposed to do as libertarians. So I appreciate that. The bad actors who go after people and want to, like, you know, publicly, like, you know, go after Josh Smith's children, they, you know, like that kind of behavior, like, those are insane, evil people that shouldn't be anywhere near the Libertarian Party or children or our social events or like whatever. And I don't care if they're blue-pilled or red-pilled or black-pilled or whatever, like, their behavior is what's disgusting, not necessarily what they believe.
Yeah, no, I agree. So we talked a little bit about why not join the GOP, why join the Libertarian Party. What would you say to people who believe in agorism and just completely disconnecting themselves from the system as much as they can, that getting involved in the system is perpetuating the system or at least catering to it? Why is getting politically involved in the Libertarian Party the way to work against the state instead of just removing yourself from it as much as you can?
I respect anyone who wants to remove themselves from the state as much as they can. However, it is, so far, you know, I live in Los Angeles, I drive a car, I have to buy groceries. I have not found a way to opt out of the gas tax, of driving on government roads. I literally live off of the toll road, so that's pretty libertarian. But with that exception, you know, there is no way for me to opt out of sales tax on everything. I've tried to, you know, as much as I can. Like, the state exists and we're sort of stuck in it. And so for me, it's a defensive maneuver. And I think that that's okay. Just like, you know, like I believe in the principle of nonviolence, but I'm not a pacifist. You know, I pulled a gun on someone one time when I, you know, that was like a whole nother thing, but it was like a would-be rapist coming at me in the middle of the night. And I'm not like, oh, I'll just lay down and get raped because I don't believe in violence. No,
right.
you can eat lead. That's not how this works. And I feel the same way about political action. Yeah, and what my preference, you know, in an ideal world would be that agorists can do their agorism thing and not come after us on social media. And then they'll be grateful if we stick up for them when they get ruby ridged, because
right.
Then the government will come for all of us. Eventually, you can only opt out so far until you get like the eye of Sauron upon you. And they're like, what are those guys doing over there? Oh, they're trying to get by without us. That must be a cult. They're radical. We've got to go gun them down in a fiery blaze, including their children. So that right there is one of my main motivations for not being an agorist, is I feel like you can't escape the state. And for crying out loud, you can't even move out of the country to escape them, right?
Like, right.
They come after you for taxes, and how many countries have we got military bases in? It's like insane trying to escape the U.S. government. So, you know, I want to dial it back.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, my saying is, if you don't involve yourselves with politics, politics will eventually involve itself with you. You know, I mean, if you just ignore it long enough and just move out in the woods, like you said, they're going to come with the hounds for you eventually. They're never going to leave you alone. I mean, over the last year, that should have been obvious. They're not going to leave us alone. What do you think about libertarians who can't operate outside of the ANCAPistan world? You were just kind of touching on it a little bit there with agorists, how they're, you know, they're not willing to think incrementally about where we are right now. That's a problem I see with libertarians too. They just have the blanket solution, like, oh yeah, well, the obvious solution is just to abolish that thing, whatever it is. And it's like, yeah, okay, I agree, but what if we can't abolish that thing? What if we can move the needle in our direction? You know, a lot of libertarians look at that as compromise, where it's not compromise. If you're moving the needle in the direction you want it to go, it's a complete win, even if it doesn't go all the way that you want it to. But I mean, if we can just legalize marijuana, if we could just end the war in Afghanistan, if we could end qualified immunity, you know, that doesn't get us to ANCAPistan, but that does move us in the direction we want to go. Do you think there is some weird hatred for any sort of incrementalism, and that can be harmful to getting anything done?
Yeah, I do think it is. So, okay, so Prop 64 in California legalized cannabis. It was a bad bill because I think it was a net negative. It didn't release nearly as many people from jail as we thought it would. A few people got released. It's a regulatory nightmare. And so billions of dollars have been lost because everybody invested in cannabis and then they couldn't open their dispensaries. And so the black market continued as much as it could. You know, that's great. But for the people who really bought in a way that they couldn't pull their money out, they all got screwed. There were other bills that we should have pushed. So Prop 64 was like the corporate one. It was like 65 pages long, backed by like Big Weed or whatever you want to call it. It didn't even benefit them either. But there were other bills that would have been much better ballot measures, like CCHI, the one that I volunteered on in California in like 2015. That would have legalized cannabis up to 100 pounds that you could have in your house, or 99 pounds. Yeah, something insane. And it put a cap on the tax at 10%. A lot of people screamed, oh, like, that's still too much. I would have said that's a really good step in the right direction. Prop 64, 30% or more. You get up to 35% tax in certain areas in California. And then, you know, the regulatory nightmare. So, like, I hear anarchists when they say, no, like, it's got to be really good. We can't go with pragmatic incrementalism. What you should take a look at, though, is like how pragmatic something is, how achievable it is. Is it going to free people from jail? Is it really going to free them, or is it going to free like five people? We don't discuss that enough. There's not enough nuance in the conversation. People sort of just hand wave it. You know, they're like either, oh yeah, it's any kind of good, so then it's good if it makes any marginal improvement, or oh, if it's not 100%, you know, radical total legalization, then it's terrible. And yeah, there's like in between areas, you know. There's like too many examples to list, but people really need to be, if you're more checked into reality as opposed to social media and your echo chamber, I think this sort of stuff is probably easier to figure out. You know, like, get involved. And politics sucks. So I understand not everybody wants to get involved in it. It's like gross. But go to a city council meeting, or just now you can listen to most of them online. And you can sort of get like a gauge of like how pragmatic or radical you could probably try to, you know, you could get something. I think we should be grounded in reality.
Yeah. Do you think that the word pragmatic has been bastardized and it's kind of been turned into the definition of what moderate is? Where, and you know, pragmatism in my mind is actually a good thing. There's nothing bad about it. It's all about what can you do at a certain time? You know, what makes sense to play out of your hand? That's kind of what pragmatism is. But because of maybe the pragmatist caucus or just how that word has been used, people think it means watering down your message or only pushing for half measures, where if you can be a pragmatic radical, you can have a radical idea and make it very clear that that is what you want to reach. But in the meantime, if you can't get there, if you can make steps in that direction, you'll take them. And that would be pragmatic. Do you think that that's just, that the term doesn't mean what it really actually is defined as meaning anymore?
Yeah, I agree with you. The meaning of the term has been totally lost. Like, I'd consider myself like a pragmatic anarchist. If and when I can avoid sales tax, I do it, like any tax. I haven't paid my federal income tax in a long ass time. You know, I can get away with it, so I do it. State income tax is different. The state of California will come after you, so I'm a little more, you know, cautious about that one. I order prescription drugs from India, where they're less regulated and they're cheaper, and, you know, like, I don't have to deal with the pharmaceutical monopoly here. I would say take anarchism as far as you can in as many areas as you can. And the areas where you can't, just acknowledge it. Like, it's okay. You know, like, you're living in a messed up world. It doesn't mean that you're a sucky anarchist if you go to the grocery store and have to, like, buy food and, you know, pay sales tax on toilet paper or something. Like, please, like, get yourself some toilet paper.
Yeah. I got a super chat here. What is Angela's thoughts about Tho Bishop and his strategy of taking over your local GOP? Marshall, if you want to rewind the video, we already talked about this a little bit earlier with Eric. I used Eric Brakey as an example, but we were talking about if you can't take over the Libertarian Party, you're never going to take over the GOP, even at a local level.
And I wish Tho the best of luck in his endeavor. I don't believe it's viable, but I invite Tho to prove me wrong.
You know, there we go.
The worst case scenario is we just improve our world.
We got another super chat here. I'm grateful Rachel Nix put Angela on my radar. Angela is willing to sacrifice to be the next LP chair, and that Reed finds time for us after hard work. Well, you're welcome on my part. Why did you decide to run for LP chair? What inspired you anyway?
Man, it was the LP Nationals' failure to speak out against the lockdowns. And I saw membership just absolutely tanking at the national level and everyone saying they were rage quitting. And I said, what if I run for chair and we don't have that experience again? Would you stay in the party if I go there? And people said, yeah. So I was like, I'm going to do this. And Rachel is great, by the way. She just left my house right before we got started. We've been prepping for the LA County Convention, and she's going to go pick up bumper stickers for our swag bags and all kinds of cool stuff. So she's off to run errands. She's my right hand. She's my ride or die.
There you go. Last time I had you on the show, I told you I would support you. You know, just because I liked what you said when you came on my show, but obviously now I'm a much more enthusiastic supporter, mostly because of what's happened over the last few months. And I admittedly wasn't aware of how bad the situation was. And, you know, I was made more aware of it, and I really want you to be chair. So what can we do to help you become chair? How can we become delegates? How can we support you in other ways? Just give us the lowdown.
All right. So there's a few steps, right? Right now, especially if you're in California, you need to join the National Party. And in California, and we're the first state to do this, and I think there are going to be a few other states. You can join, if you go to lp.org, you can join the state party and the national party. Do it in one fell swoop. And here's why it's important. The number of delegates that we get to send to the national convention is dependent upon your national party delegate numbers, like your joins in your state. So in California, there's two steps, right? Join the national party, and then you join the state party. Every state is different, but every state delegate count for the Reno convention in 2022, where I'll get elected, it's all contingent upon how many national memberships you have. So you gotta join there. And then you wanna join your state party or your county party, you know, like you'll, depends on what state you're in. If you're in LA, you would wanna go to lplac.us, that, and then you join there, and then you, by default, you join the state party as well. $25 a year. So you're looking at $50 a year total for both memberships. And you need to join at National by about the middle of October, I think, in order for it to count towards Reno. And then you want to get involved. And if you're just like, I hate all of the people in my county or state party, they don't all suck. But if you have that idea, just insulate yourself within the Mises Caucus or a small group of people you find that are good. And attend a few meetings a year. You know, in LA, like, we have great culture. We have monthly meetings online. There are a lot of different ways to participate. You want to find whatever suits you. But if you want to become a delegate and go to Reno, and that's where you're able to vote for me, you need to at least make yourself known and familiar in your state party, because those are the people who are going to vote for you to go. So at minimum, I would say you want to attend at least 3 meetings in your state or county party so that people can familiarize themselves with you, volunteer to help something, you know, just depends on your time, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, you certainly have my support. I would encourage everyone to join the Mises Caucus. The Mises Caucus is the Liberty Unity Caucus. They want to focus on the big issues and, you know, get everyone on the same page against the state. That is really what they want to do. I was a skeptic at first, but I can tell you guys from my experience, from dealing with people on both sides of the aisle in the LP and getting to know a lot of high profile figures in the Mises Caucus, I've been very impressed. My mind's been completely changed. So I want you guys to try to become delegates, try to elect Angela for chair. I will be there in Reno. I will certainly be a delegate for you. I'm very hopeful about the direction of the party going forward, because I don't know, there's maybe it's just because I've gotten involved recently and I have this YouTube channel, but I'm seeing more and more people interested than I've ever seen before. People that I've known for a long time who were happy Democrats or happy Republicans or happy uninvolved people, that's changing. They're not content anymore. They want something else. They're asking me questions they haven't asked before. They're willing to leave things behind that they wouldn't have left behind before. How much hope do you have? Do you think that we actually can make a difference? I mean, obviously we're all going to say that, you know, that's why we're doing this, because we hope we can make a difference. But do you have actual hope that things are going to change? Do you see that same new inspiration that I've been seeing?
Absolutely. One of the things that really makes me hopeful too is the quality of people that we're getting in through the Mises Caucus. We're getting a lot of people who have really valuable skill sets, you know, marketing, IT and tech, obviously, like that's a given, but more than that, you know, like leadership, people who can train other people and how to make their state parties and their county parties more efficient so that we can actually do something, right? Not just sit in a meeting every few months and be like, oh, here's my report. Oh, you know, rabble, we're adjourned. Like, people are doing meaningful activism, decriminalizing psychedelics. That's something we've been working on. Posing lockdowns. Like, I think the trajectory for the party right now, even though there's so much fighting and just chaos at the national level, you know, like that sucks, but the overarching theme is like, we're definitely making progress. So please join us. And if you want to help me get to state conventions to speak to people, you can support me on Patreon. Yeah, that's patreon.com/AngelaMcArdle. And you can also read more about what I'm up to on my website, angelamcardle.com.
All right. One last question I did want to ask you. You brought this up at Pork Fest, where I had the pleasure of meeting you, by the way. You were talking about how there are not a lot of women in the party or even the movement. And that's something I've noticed, too. You know, we had a nominee last year who was a woman. We've got you running for chair. You're a woman, but we don't have a lot of women out there. What can we do to try to bring more women into the party and into the movement? You know, I talk to a lot of women, and a lot of them don't feel like there's a welcome atmosphere for them. I think I have like a 97.8% male audience on this YouTube channel. What would you say to men in the party and in the movement? What can they do to try to make it a more welcoming environment for women? And then outside of what men can do, what do you think the party needs to do as a whole to get more women to join?
I don't think you need to change anything about... I don't think you need to pander to women. You need to include, what's the right term? You need to include things that women are passionate about that are libertarian. And the two things that immediately come to mind are medical freedom, because women care very much about the health and well-being of their children, and that includes what they put into their children's bodies. And medical freedom includes opposing mandatory vaccinations, and it also includes cannabis and Rick Simpson oil for children with seizure disorders. So work on those two things, champion them, do outreach into those communities, have crossover. And then the same goes for the food freedom community. People who want to sell food straight from their farm, people who want to sell raw milk, things like that. There are a lot of women who care very much about that. So I recommend that you reach out to those people. What else? The Weston A. Price Foundation, the carnivore community. I get like, yeah, whatever. That has kind of a dude bro vibe, but there's actually a lot of women in it. And there's a lot of crossover, and they're very liberty minded, and they're all skeptical or just outright reject the lockdowns. So start by branching out there. Those are people who are libertarian, but basically aren't in the movement. We don't need to water down our principles, though. We don't need to have squishy, you know, like, oh, feel good women marketing. You don't need to do that. You just need to go to women and say that we care about what you care about. And I guarantee you they'll join. Oh, you know what another one is homeschool groups. You know, that's where women are. Start doing outreach to them. Invite them. Invite someone to speak at one of your local meetups or your like a county level convention. Like, those are the places where women are at. Don't think like single hot babes for liberty, you know, that's going to be a tough sell. Start with women who are going to be emotionally invested in the fight for freedom, and then maybe their single friends will come along too.
All right. In the description, I think I have the link to your Twitter, and you already mentioned your website and your Patreon. Is there any final links you want to drop or any final things you want to say?
I would say, if you are annoyed or disheartened by the drama at the National Party, please look past it and look to the future. And those of us who care and who value our freedom and want to achieve personal liberty in our lifetimes and for our children, we are in this together. Don't worry about everyone else. Just be onward and upward.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me again, Angela, and you have my full support.
Thank you so much, Reed.